Welcome to Creative Warriors, a community of purpose-driven entrepreneurs, creative thinkers in business doing what we are meant to do. I'm your host, Jeffrey Shaw. Hey, Warriors, I am very excited to have Denise Martin with us today. Words create worlds. It's one of my favorite sayings. That's true in how we speak to others, and it's true about how we speak to ourselves. Our guest today is a master of words and the use of language to improve your self-talk as well as your communication skills with others. Welcome, Denise.
Thanks, Jeff. Glad to be here.
Let me tell you all a little bit more about Denise. Denise Martin has run her own business for 10 years, presenting sales workshops and trainings, including building business communication skills, copywriting, and creating effective and persuasive online marketing for nonprofit boards, organizations, and individuals. Through the workshops, training seminars, and coaching offered by her business, You Simply Better, clients learn how to effectively communicate with themselves and with others by applying cutting-edge communication skills from the world of cognitive psychology and linguistics. So, Denise, before you share your amazing insights with us, we want to know a little bit more about you personally.
Sure.
I love how children can get words mixed up. And as a mom, do you have a favorite story when one of your children understood or said something different than they intended?
I actually do. What a great question. I used to tell my kids that there were a lot of words that they couldn't say, and they were told that shut up was one of them. And I never wanted to hear them say shut up to each other. I just thought that was not very nice and very rude. And so my daughter, who was very mad at her sister and was dying to tell her to shut up, said to her, and with all the inflection, she said, "Get up." And she looked at me, and of course, it wasn't shut up. So there wasn't anything I could do about it except for say, okay, she followed the rules, but she totally changed it to her own meaning, as it were. She invented her own word to get by the rules. So she was very creative linguistically.
I love that. And I'll bet that it says something about her personality today. Having kids of my own, I know how that goes. So what's the best piece of advice you've ever received, a meaningful quote or a favorite book that you would offer to inspire us, and why?
A favorite book? Well, my favorite quotes are always by Einstein. But actually, my favorite books are by Einstein. He's really one of my heroes. But I think my favorite quote of all time is from Henry Ford. And he basically said, and he said many things, but the quote that I like the best is, he said, "If you think you're wrong, you're right. And if you think you're right, you're also right." Or something along those lines. It was basically, I think he said, "If you think you can, you can. And if you think you can't, you also are right." So he was basically saying that we make our own reality, and we do it to ourselves, and we have the control that we don't know that we can exercise.
Love that. All right. So I was so eager and anxious to talk to you about this idea of self-talk, because let's face it, we all have self-talk, those tapes running in our mind, the things going around in our heads. Is the root of self-talk always based on the past, or is some of our self-talk simply kind of who we are?
Yep, both is correct. A lot of our self-talk is who we are, but it was created in the past. A lot of it comes from childhood, and it comes from our parents saying stuff to us, our early influencers who admonished us or who gave us their wisdom or who just raised us, right? Those people that were very influential in our early lives. And then what they said to us, grandparents, aunts, uncles, especially our parents, those become tapes that run in our head. And the self-talk, we keep hearing those words come around the corner, and they become habits. They become linguistic habits. Sometimes we become adults and we're still carrying those old tapes, and then we say things like, "Geez, I've turned into my mother." Or we say, "I'm sounding just like my mother now," or my father, either gender. But we are definitely passing on those tapes to ourselves in our own talk, and as our parents did ahead of us, they did it from their parents. And so it kind of perpetuates and it goes through. And our inner talk, the voices that we carry in our heads, which are our childhood voices, become a large part of who we are. And the important part of what I do is to try and teach people that they don't have to be that person if they don't like what those inner voices are saying. They actually have the control, like Henry Ford said, to change them if they know, one, that they're there, and two, that they can change them, and then three, how do we change them?
Right. Isn't it, you know, it seems to be sort of impossible, no matter, cause even if you assume everybody around you is well-intended, it seems to be there's always some culture of wanting to do the opposite. You know, if we grow up with parents that are really overbearing, then we're likely to want to be, you know, live our lives freer. Or if you grow up with parents who, you know, didn't know whether you came or went, you suddenly become an overbearing parent. Like, we're always in the, I think we're always in the search of balance. So it's almost impossible for there not to be some self-talk. So I guess my question around that is to what extent do we need to change your self-talk, or to what extent do we simply accept it?
Well, what you're talking about is more the independence from parents. When we get older, we want to, when we're young, we want to be just like our parents because that's the only people that we know and they know no wrong. As we get older, we want to be independent from them because we want to become our own person. It doesn't really mean, though, that we want to be different from them. It's just that we want to be a person in our own right and not kind of in their shadow. But a lot of people do turn out to be very similar to their parents, and they don't mind that. They want to be just like their parents. So I'm not sure that what we're looking for is to be that different from them. Maybe in your case it was, certainly in my case it was, but there are a lot of people that aren't. And what you're kind of alluding to, I think, is that there is a motivation for what the self-talk is. And that motivation, there's a lot of different facets that go with it. And part of what I do in the in my work is to understand what those motivations are. And the one that you're talking about now is our sorting style. Do we sort same, same? Do we sort same, different? Do we sort different, different? And so the whole different area of it. But our self-talk absolutely leans around how we sort, which is part of the motivation of how we can change it if we don't like it, or we can lean into it if we do like it. But understanding part of how we are motivated in our self-talk is a big part of the training.
And is it, I guess I'm curious whether it's always a matter of changing the self-talk, or can change come about through acceptance?
Can change come about through acceptance? If it's acceptance, then we don't really want change. So those two words are a little, they're not the antithesis of each other, but when we accept something as it is, then we're not changing, right? Whereas change is saying, well, I like certain things about myself, but there's some things that I would change if I could. And that's the part of it that rather than saying, well, this is the way I am, this is how I've always been, there's no changing it. You know, it's different versus I like this about myself. I might not like this about myself, but if I accept it and say I can't change it, then there'll be no change. If on the other hand, you understand how it is that you are, and then you say, but I can change it if I talk to myself in a certain way, which is different from how I've always talked to myself, which is the old habits that keep you right where you are.
And
does that answer it?
It does. And, you know, it seems to me that most of the self-talk that we're talking about is negative. You know, most of, I mean, it would be nice if most so often it was positive, but a lot of times the concern for self-talk would be because there's negative tapes running your head, things about lack of confidence or self-worth. So how can one begin to rewire that negative self-talk, that feeling that I'm not worthy, or that, you know, I lack confidence? How do we begin to reverse that or rewire our thought processes?
Exactly right. We are negative almost by nature because it is a self-preservation inside of ourselves that we want to protect and we want to defend. So our thoughts start to defend and we get defensive whenever we think we're about to come under attack. So a lot of our self-talk does tend to be negative in a preserving type of way. We're trying to keep ourselves from getting hurt by assuming the opposite. So the way we rewire that is to understand on a lot of different dimensions who we are and where that's coming from, and then reframe it with different words so we recognize this about ourselves. Like, we're only negative when there are certain triggers or stimulus that are in the environment or in the situation. When we know what those triggers are, and then we sense one of them coming, then we know in advance this is going to be our reaction, and then we slow it down right there and break into a whole new habit where we tell ourselves a different. So we create new tapes is what happens, and we know when the triggers are coming so that we can tape over and start new language patterns that will not reinforce the old negative language patterns.
And what are some of the, if you can offer us some specific steps or techniques, whether it's, you know, affirmations, meditation, I mean, these some of the techniques that you work with, or what other ones would you offer that one can apply? Either are there daily actions, daily practices, things like that?
That's not the word way that I do that, which is more a little more spiritual. I'm a little more scientific in it, indicating that language itself, there's a lot of science behind it, the science of linguistics, and that there is a way to do things that is different from affirmations, which I guess some people feel that affirmations are positive and it's just if you say it enough, it'll happen. But in my world, sometimes it feels a little empty to me. And you can, you know, they've had those Saturday Night Live skits where they stand in front of the mirror and they say, I'm a good person and I know I'm good. And I know, and to me, that doesn't actually work. What works is knowing the way you are. Again, we go back to the motivation. And the work that I do to help people to basically change is to say, are you a towards or away from person? Or are you an options or procedures person? Or are you an internal or an external person? And then work with that to make yourself, work within who you are to make yourself that person that you want to be. So, for instance, if we have an example of what somebody wants to get a job, and they always, and I'm just making this up, but they always go into the job interview and they always beat themselves up and they say, you know what, there's nobody, he's not going to hire me, I'm not going to get this job. And they know that they do this and they self-sabotage themselves because as they do that, they go in and they give the wrong impression. But if you already know in advance who you are and that you're going to do this, then you can work with who you are to say, so in their personality style, if you're self-sabotaging yourself at an interview and you say, I'm never good enough, I'm not going to be hired, there's no way anybody in their right mind is going to put me in for this job, then you are a away from person. So that means that you are working from, moving away from the problem of I need to get a job in order to get paid, in order to make a living, in order to buy food. So you're moving away from that orientation. So if you know that's who you are, then you work with that versus a towards person who is working towards the goal of I want to be gainfully employed because I want to have the some money so that I can enjoy life and I understand the value of work and of being productive and all that. You see, there's a difference. There's a towards person and there's a away from person. So once you decide what your motivation is, and I said you were a towards away from person, but I don't actually know that. We would have to sit down and figure out who you are. Then you would use the right language to motivate you versus the wrong language because you're using language on the wrong type. And that's why you kind of get stuck into these ruts and your mind kind of goes in that direction. Is that making sense?
It does. I'm curious. I find this really fascinating because so many of the guests that I have in Creative Warriors, but yeah, we have a lot of definitely a bend towards the spiritual side. So that's why I think your view is so refreshing and offers us a very different approach to this topic, which is why I wanted to have you as a guest. So tell us, I want to know more about the scientific side of it. Like, is it, you know, what is it that's done or what is the work? What is actually some of the steps or processes of linguistics that alter scientifically our response and self-talk?
Well, there are certain words and certain word patterns that we fall into that become habitual and that makes the mind go in a certain direction. Like, for instance, the word don't is a word that because we use that word, and we can't visualize that word. So language is very visual. We think with our thoughts, with specific words, and we try and create a picture in our minds because as humans, we are visual by and large. You know, that was the first thing that opens up as we're born is our eyes. We can see and we value that sense over all others. We would rather, go deaf or then go blind. We just value our sight. 55% of us are visually dominant, and I go into the senses a little bit more, but I'm only bringing this up because the word don't cannot be visualized. So whenever you use the word don't, then the words that come after it that can be visualized are the ones that people hear because they skip right over the words that they cannot understand. So if I say, don't think of a pink giraffe, what do you think of?
Yeah, it's a pink giraffe.
Exactly, because you cannot picture don't. So what people tend to do is they say to other people, or they say in their own heads, don't worry, it's going to be all right. What's the first thing that you do?
Worry.
You start to worry. Exactly. So the words that we use when we're talking to ourselves, we're talking to others, but we're talking here about talking to ourselves first because we have to understand ourselves first. A lot of those special words really kind of push the thought forward. And that's the scientific part. It's what that word does inside your head, in your brain. There are other words like because is an excellent choice of another word. And we've been programmed as people to think that right after because is going to come a really good reason. Maybe it's not a really good reason, but we think it is. So if I say something to you, or if I say something to myself in my own head, and I say, I really want this, I really want this, I really want this, whatever this is, then that's one thing. But if I say, I really want this because I'm a wonderful person and deserve it, I really want this because it'll really help if I get this. I really want this because I've worked hard and I deserve this. That just that because is the most persuasive word and can convince you in your own head, or it can convince others if you're using it, that that word is a magic word. It actually makes the difference. And studies, scientific studies have been done on this word to show that when you use it, people will, yourself included, agree. And if you don't use it, then you have a less than a fighting chance of getting them to kind of go where you want it to go. So if you're trying to persuade yourself, be sure and throw that word in.
It's fascinating. You know, as you're saying this, I'm thinking of examples in my own head, and I'm thinking, you know, I'm broadcasting here from Manhattan. I'm thinking if you say to someone, don't go down that street because it's dark and scary, I immediately get a visual of a street that's dark and scary.
There you go.
Right. The word because definitely, but like you said, it's sort of like you can't visualize the word because, but I can visualize what comes after it and believe it.
Yes. And as long as we've been talking, as human beings, as long as we've had language, which hasn't been forever because Neanderthal man only had grunts and groans, but because the word because has been in our linguistic vocabulary, we have come to expect that there's something believable that's coming right afterwards. And that's just human nature. We've been through years of this programming, as it were. So there are words that program the brain, and that's the scientific part of it.
I have to say, I love this idea because our community of warriors are primarily visual people. I mean, one way or another, being a photographer myself, a lot of my audience are photographers, but we have, coaches and, well, as you said, people are inherently visual, but you add to that the fact that the people in my world are creative to some degree, that, gosh, they're even more so visual. So I think there's a tremendous amount of power here. So I would love to then talk about some practical application of the power of linguistics and language when it comes to communication skills and business. You know, as entrepreneurs, our communication is vitally important. So I guess before that, then maybe this is part of it. Can you share with us, what are some of the, I know you mentioned in some of your writings, the idea of universal human behaviors. Like, what are some of the universal human behaviors that we should be aware of as entrepreneurs?
There are a lot of them. I wouldn't necessarily say that, I'm trying to think of the ones that apply mainly to communication, because there are a lot of them that are just in general, but the ones that are most applicable are that we fear the unknown. We all have a reaction to something that's unknown, and we fear it, which is why you went back to how we think that there's going to be rejection, or we think that we're going to be very negative. Well, the unknown is very negative, but there are certain people also that see the unknown as an opportunity, and then there are others that see it as a threat. So as human beings, we all have the trait that we fear the unknown, but there are there are certain personalities that actually like the unknown, and there are others that, so we only fear it when it is a, something that is not, when we're not comfortable. When we are out of our comfort zone, we totally fear the unknown. When we're in our comfort zone, then the personality style takes over. So there are four basic personality styles, and I'd go into all those, but it's kind of, more than we probably can do it in the time that we have. But two of those personality styles, when they're comfortable, they like the unknown. And the other two, when they are not comfortable, they fear the unknown as a threat. And so what we would do with that as communicators is we're saying, well, how do we make ourselves more familiar to people so that they are not fearful of us because we're strangers? Let's say we're sending out an email and we're trying to recruit business and we're trying to get people to come our way. So we say, well, we don't want to kind of go in on this person because they're going to think I'm a pest. I just keep coming back and coming back and coming back, and they're ignoring me. So am I making myself familiar, or am I making myself a pest? Because we know that people don't like what's not familiar to them, but some people kind of do. So the language that you use inside of those emails is what's going to make the difference as you are talking about traits in personalities that are that in human beings.
Well, that's, and there's so much value in what you can offer here, which I'm very excited about. Let's get kind of practical here for a moment, because I know this will really help my community of warriors, those that are in business. And let's start with emails, because it was actually one of the questions I had for you. Like, what are some of the nuances of writing that one can use to create an effective email? Let's say we're responding to someone who's inquired about our services, whether they're, you know, photography services, coaching services, or what have you. What is some of the language we can use as an effective response to an inquiry of our services?
Yes, and when we talk about email, we're talking about the written language. And the written language is only 7% of overall communication. The spoken language, where we have tone that's also part of the words, adds another 45%, 38% of communication. And then the body language piece, which we haven't talked about, is 55% of communication. So I'm just going to back up and say that when we're in person and we're relating to people, we've got 100% of communication there, because we can read all those channels. There are two other channels that I'm probably not going to go into, which happens to be color and scent. But we have communications deliver in five different delivery methods. So the vision, the hearing, the scent, the color, and also the written word. So, and I just say those to say that as we start to move into email, we cut away all of those, or most of those. So the body language goes away, so you just lost 55%. The tone goes away, so you just lost 38%. So what's left in an email is 7%. And of that 7% of communication, your words are hugely important, because that's all you got, right? I mean, there is a little bit of tone, but unfortunately in an email, the tone doesn't come from you. It comes from the reader. The other person puts their own tone onto your words based on, sadly, the kind of day that they're having and the mood that they're in. So if you say something very innocuous or very innocent and they're having a bad day, they're going to go, what did he mean by that? And if, on the other hand, they're having a good day, they'll say, oh, yeah, no big deal. It really, a lot of it is that person. So the tone is there, but people don't realize that that tone is very much of the other person's creation, not your own, because you don't have the benefit of speaking to the person. So one, that makes just the words really important. The other problem with email, or one of the problems, is that there is, we are very, very busy. So there isn't a lot of time that people give to emails. And we've got so much stuff online, and we are bombarded with data all the time, that we're just looking to move away from as much of that data as we can possibly move away from, and just kind of delete, move it away, put it for later, never get back to it, and ignore this data because we are just bombarded with it. So another piece of advice on email is that we have to make it extremely tight in what we say. And the most important part of any email is really the headline. The headline is critical because it determines whether they're going to read further, whether they're going to go down into the email at all, whether they're going to give you the time of day, whether they're going to assume they know or not. So on an email, the most important part is the headline. And then inside of it, the spacing, which is, if you will, the body language of the email, is really important because people are looking to skim. They're looking to get through it as quickly as possible. Bullets are really good. Grammar is not important. Spelling is important. Grammar is not important. And the words that you actually use should be so tight into who they are that they will read that email. And that's the whole gist of basically this program is of my program called Smart Writing, is that you understand that person so well that you're writing the words that are written to them. So the content is still there, but the little words around the content is what will make it so that the person will quickly read it and understand it and move on.
It's really fascinating, and I suspect you'll probably support this idea that one of the things I offer as a coach that I constantly offer to my coaching clients is to create draft emails for everything. Now, when I started doing it, I was doing it as a time saver. But for all the reasons you just said, I found there were just so many benefits to having written draft emails, such as I took time to narrow it down, make it clear, kind of neutralize it. And I'm realizing, listening to you, that that's kind of the effect of draft emails, is that you're creating the email at a neutral point. So therefore, you can kind of neutralize the tone, because any of us that have ever been in a relationship, we all know what can happen with texting and emails. Like, yeah, I mean, like you said, it's a total reflection of your day and how you respond to someone. So I think that's really, I love your advice. And like I said, so I'll add to it that I think that's the value of creating draft emails. I have dozens and dozens of them pretty much for every situation I come across in business for that reason. So let's expand on this even further, because you're so spot on. So then, in our world of online marketing, which is so important to most entrepreneurs, what then? So tell us about some of the nuances of some of the other parts of our online presence, such as websites, sales pages. What works? What doesn't work? What should we avoid? What should we try?
Yes. Oh, and let me give you one quick tip on your draft emails. A great one is to not put in the address of who you're sending it to, because what that saves you from doing is if you put it in there and you accidentally click send and you weren't quite ready or you weren't thinking about it, or it just can't send. So when you're doing your draft emails, put in the subject, but do not put in the person who it's for, and you will find that it will save your butt.
Yeah, I'm great that you said that. That's actually a rule in my business across the board. It's actually the last thing we put in is the two, because it's been too many times you're partway through an email and you accidentally hit it or something. But thank you for bringing that up. It's a great, and most people don't think of that, but it's a great practical tip. Thank you.
Yeah, so back to we were talking about, your question was on, I'm sorry.
Online marketing, just your website, yes. Sales pages, like what works and what should we avoid?
Yeah, so on sales pages, the most important part on websites, on sales pages and whatnot, is to understand where the person is in the relationship cycle. We are in a relationship with everybody, and every relationship goes through a 5 kind of phase process. And within that process, each phase has different language involved. And the problem with a lot of web copy or with sales pages is they do not understand where they are in that cycle. And so they're using the wrong language. So you would use different language if the person were, you were just meeting them for the first time. And then you would use different language if you were going to ask them out for a date, which is really what our sales pages are doing. It's saying, I am a virtual unknown to you. Now I'm going to ask you for a date. And then you use different language when you're going to move them down the line a little bit and say, let's go on a second date, shall we? And then you go a third or a fourth phase or a different language if you say, geez, will you marry me? And then finally, different language when you're standing at the altar. So people don't get that there is timing involved. We're in a relationship all the time as we communicate with people. And where are we in that relationship? What stage are we in? And then what's the language to use around those stages?
That's such a brilliant point. I'm so glad you're mentioning that, because I wholeheartedly agree with you that it's something that hasn't really been widely expressed in the world of online marketing, and even website design is getting really clear on the relationship. So just to make that, to really bring that home, make that clear, how would you categorize the relationship on a website? Like, when somebody's coming to the website for the first time, is it, I mean, you're not even on a first date. I mean, isn't the goal then of the website to invite them on a first date?
It depends on what your product is and how established you are in the industry as to what it is. So, for instance, on phase one, that is either unknown, or the person, either the product is not known or the person delivering the product isn't known. So your job in the beginning is to make the concept of what you're doing known. So if that is coaching, or if that's a photographer or whatnot, do they understand what the process or what you are doing in order to have this be a website that they want to patronize? They don't know who you are from anybody. You might specialize, let's take you, Jeff, because you're a photographer. You might specialize in out nature. You might specialize in weddings. You might specialize in children, animals. We don't really know, right? So the beginning point when they're coming to you for the first time is, this is the concept of what I am embracing. And if this is something that speaks to you and that you want, you know, what kind of photographer do you want? Then the language is towards that. When they move on with you and they click on what you want them to click on, which is the second piece, it's basically to get more information. So that might be, so they get who you are at this point. So you've passed stage one, but now you're on stage two, which you're clicking onto something on the web page that they're interested in. And that's where the language shifts. So the language on that second piece is different from the language on the initial website. And then by the time, so the second piece that they're clicking, or the first piece that they're clicking on, which is piece two to you, stage two, is an invitation to learn more about what it is that you do. And so you're telling them, maybe it's a body of work. Maybe it's, I should be giving you an example from a real client. But here I am going down this photography road. But you understand what I'm saying. So we get to the second piece, and that second piece is more that educational piece. It's saying, this is the world of good photography and bad photography. This is kind of, it's educational. This is what you could be looking for. And what you're basically doing is you're educating them on the concept so they understand why your price is valid, why you are a better photographer, but you're not pushing yourself, because that's like pushing the wedding ring out there, right? They're not ready for that yet. They need first to hear about why this is you. It's not you have a better idea. You're educating them on the whole concept of what the world of photography is about, in case they don't know. So it's, here's why, here's the differences between a great wedding picture and a mediocre wedding picture, and it's perspective a lot of times, right? It's what you see. And I'm not a photographer, so, you know, I'm probably not the one to talk on this subject, but anyway.
Well, I think actually where I can help you out here, because, to put it in perspective of photographers, because I'd love to kind of hone it in and give a clear example. I think it's a great idea. Is so when one goes to websites, I think we're perfectly aligned with how I guide people in creating their website, but I've never made the connection with the language part as much as you're making here. And that when someone goes to the website initially, really what you want somebody to feel and sense is the whole of you as a photographer, or a coach for that matter, right? Whatever you're, particularly when you're in our type of businesses, our community of warriors, we're in business marketing ourselves and a talent. Everybody, you know, my audience all have talents in one degree or another. So to me, the initial part of a website should be that you're giving somebody the whole of who you are. And very often that involves various services. So as you said, step number one might be the communication of, this is why I do what I do, and this is what I'm about. And then step two might be, okay, I in particular am interested in baby photography, or I'm interested in one-to-one coaching. So there's something more specific. So then there's a path that they would go to that. So now you're on a second date in a way. Like, now they've stepped in a little bit further. So now your language gives them more information, et cetera, et cetera. And then there's, you know, then at some point, the point is to lead them to hitting the contact page, where you're, they're opening up the invitation for a deeper relationship. Is that kind of a fair scenario?
It is. And then by the time you get to the offer, and so by the time you get to stage four, you're at the, so the first stage is you go from unknown to known. And then from the second stage, you go from education into the overall concept of what it is that you, that maybe it's coaching, maybe it's photography, whatever it is, but the overall concept of the industry, as it were. And then the third step is now they're starting to look around at who else is out there doing that. Okay, they're sold on the idea that they need a photographer. What other photographers are out there? So you're kind of talking about the differences between the different kinds of photography that's out there. And of course, you're leaning in to yourself more. And then by the time you get to the fourth stage, it's, okay, here's who I am, and here is what I do within the realm of what you're talking about. And then by the next, so now they get sold on you, and then it goes to the offer at that point. Now they have to be sold on the offer at the last stage. And so that last stage is what a lot of people, that kind of landing page is what they kind of jump forward way too soon. And it's a process. It has to move through these logical cycles, through the stages, before you can get to the end.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. I think it's particularly nowadays, I think one of the biggest mistakes we can do is to try to get to the marriage proposal too quick.
Yes.
You know, yeah. And in particular in business, like you have to build the relationship. And quite honestly, going back to emails, when I coach my clients on how to write emails to their clients, one of the first things I suggest, I mean, if they've inquired about your services, the first thing I suggest is right in the, after the subject line and the response is first paragraph is to let them know that they made the right choice. Like demonstrate, let them know that you're the right fit. If it's true, I mean, obviously it has to be true, but if people have inquired about your services and that's in fact what you do, congratulate them by letting them know that it sounds like you and I are a perfect fit. I think it puts people at ease, and then you can go into the rest of the email. So it's sort of the email, if they've walked through the four phases through your website and have chosen to reach out to you through a contact form or an email, that's a continuation. Your acknowledgement, your response to them is a continuation of the previous four steps. Very well put together. I've never quite thought about it that way. So thank you for kind of stepping that out.
You're welcome. And there's a process to everything. And what I would back up a little bit on what you just said is the language inside of it. It's not as clear cut as me saying, here's the language everybody should use, because that's a template. But and I don't believe in templates. I believe in individual connections, and each person is different. But what I teach is that you can use the words around what you said. So for instance, you said, I think that we're a good fit. So those words, you know, I think that we're a good fit. That's kind of saying commonalities. It's like, we think alike, we're like, and we know that likes like, and our, what we're trying in this world to be is likable, because we, from like, we get trust, and from trust, we get business. So we don't do business with anybody we don't like and trust. So likability comes first. And part of when you're saying, I think, we're a good fit, we're a good match, we're comfortable together, it's just reinforcing what they may or may not have been thinking about. But the other piece of that is, what I teach is that how you can use that language or language like it around what you're saying. So if the person, let's go back to the motivation as to why they're there and who they are. So if they are not towards or away from, but let's move into where their authority source comes from. So whether they're internal or external. So if they are an internal person, meaning that their standards are inside of themselves, then the language that you want to use is, you decide. I know you're going to figure out the right thing to do. Whereas if they are an external, you don't want to say that to them. You want to say, I recommend that you take this next step. Do you see the difference?
Yeah, that's interesting.
And that kind of language patterns is what I want everybody to understand, that there is a lot to this whole language piece. So as you're constructing your emails or your communications, it's really knowing that person so tightly. Are they an options person or are they a procedures person? An options person who sees all the options will say, you'd say, there is so many possibilities here. It's endless what we can do together. That's an options person. That scares a procedures person very much. And they're going to be, that's not what they want to hear. They want to hear, okay, first we're going to do this, then we're going to do this, and then we're going to do this, which is going to lead to this. It's that step-by-step process for them. And we can shoot ourselves in the foot by using the wrong language with the wrong person and by not recognizing that people are so different on so many different parameters.
Yeah. And yet, at the same time, I think it's what's interesting about that for me is that it also relates to branding. You know, and yes, people are individuals, but for me, everything you've just said really validates the need to have really tight branding so that by and large, when you're really clear on who you're meant to serve and who your audience is, by and large, the people that come forward will be of, you know, to some degree, so there's some commonalities. You know how to talk to them. Like I know how to talk to my audience. I know how to speak to my community of warriors. I've lived it. It's me, you know, so I know them. Now, am I going to get it right with every one of them? No, but you know, I take great care on who I invite on the show and making sure that the guests on our show are a fit for what they need to know as a creative warrior. So I try to keep branding, and it's true of anyone in business, like try to keep your branding so tight that you really kind of do know their talk. You do know their language. And while you might need to individualize it, that by and large, you get it right because you know them so well. But it takes a lot of work to get to know your audience so well that you build your branding to make sure that those are the people that step forward.
Absolutely right. And I take that branding to a much deeper level than most people think of, because when they think of, okay, who is my target market? And they'll say something like, it is a male who is 35 to 60 years old that likes, let's say, I don't know what their product is, that likes the outdoors and is a CEO and does a lot of kayaking. I don't know, but they'll say stuff like that. And to me, that's not branding at all. It's more of the deeper stuff that we're talking about. I want to know, are they internal or external? What is their stress response? What is their convincing mode? What is their rule structure? What is their towards or away from orientation? What is their source of authority? And you know all those stuff. I could run this, and I have a template that I go through with each person that sit down with me, and we go through everything. It takes about an hour, and then they know their person so well. And I could do that with you, Jeff, and I know that you would know your creative warriors on every single one of this. What is their motivational trigger? What is their sense of authority that I talked about, or what is their primary sensory style, which you already told me is visual. But if it were a school teacher, it isn't visual, quite honestly. It depends on who they are. And once you have that all down, then you have your little cheat sheet. And as you start to write your emails or your web pages or your copy of any sort, then you take your cheat sheet and you know the language around it to use for this exact audience.
Oh, I love that. So how do I sign up for this test? I want to take this. This sounds like this is right up my alley. I love stuff like this.
Well, great. Right. So this is basically smart writing. It's my smart writing course, and be happy to sign you up. Just let me know and, you know, we'll get going. But this is totally up your alley.
Oh, it's very cool. I love the idea of, listen, whatever effort I put as much effort as I can into really knowing the people that I serve, because gosh, when you know that, everything else just falls into place. And like you said, I mean, I have a rule whenever I'm writing anything. Last night was a perfect example. I was writing an email that I was going to be sending out to people. And if it doesn't flow easily for me, I stop. Yeah, there's something not right. There's something not real, authentic. Or to me, it's language should flow, because if you're really embodying who you're speaking to, the language flows. So I love that. So gosh, Denise, this has been fascinating. We could go on and on. We didn't really get a chance to talk too much about body language, although I love the fact that you, what was the percentage of our perception of 70? What was the percentage of body language?
Body language is, words are 7%, and then body language is the other, believe it or not, 93%, but part of that is 38% is tone of voice. So if you take out tone of voice, then it's 55%, which is our gestures and our stance, how much space we leave in between people, those kinds of things, how we're moving our body in space and time is 55%. How we gesture, big gestures, small gestures, head nods, eye movements, all that stuff is 55%. And then tone of voice, if you count that as body language because it's missing in emails, then it brings body language up to, unfortunately, 93%. It's huge. If somebody says something and their body language is saying something else, you automatically believe the body language, obviously.
Yeah. And I, again, just to go back to the emails, I think there's a really big takeaway to realize that if you look at the 100% of language and communication, that if emails are only working with 7%, we truly have stripped away everything else and you're left with 7%. So it is, it's gosh, that to me is so powerful. Really ups the level of responsibility to making sure you're writing your emails correctly. So I love that. So, Denise, in a moment, I'm going to ask you our discovery round questions. So while you're preparing yourself for these thought provoking questions,
okay.
It's a little scary, right? We're going to hear a brief message and we'll be right back. If you're in business doing something you're truly passionate about, my new training and coaching program, The Creative Warrior Unleashed, will rock your world. The Creative Warrior Unleashed is a 7-week program where you overcome the 7 core conflicts that stop creative entrepreneurs in their tracks. I know this journey. I've lived it myself. These are the 7 conflicts that are common amongst creative thinkers and must be overcome to achieve your highest level of success. You'll learn why your so-called lack of focus is your greatest asset, how to create more flow in your business so that being in business is easier than you ever imagined, how to create a clear brand identity so that you are easily found by your perfect clients, and create a diversified business that excites you and rewards you with multiple streams of income. In just 7 weeks, you can gain the clarity that you need for your business success. Simply go to creativewarriorunleashed.com to find out when the next 7-week program begins. The Creative Warrior Unleashed, the path to success for the creative warrior. Check it out, creativewarriorunleashed.com. All right, Denise, it is time for our discovery round questions. Question number 1, what drives you crazy?
Unproductivity drives me crazy. I just can't stand when I'm not productive or somebody else, my kids aren't productive. Makes me nuts.
Okay, got it. Number 2 is, looking back, what's something that you can't believe you did for your career?
I actually sabotaged myself. I had a really great job and I basically stood up for a client, which wasn't, the boss didn't like that and basically ended up firing me. And I guess I can't believe I did that because it was a really, really, really well-paying job. But I think it was the right thing to do. I think if I do it again, I'd still do it.
Awesome. And the 3rd is there something in common in everything that inspires you?
Yeah, it's actually this whole communication pattern, which I never realized was the link. I've done a lot of different things, and I never realized that it was all linked by communication. Hmm. Yeah.
Beautiful. And the last question is, imagine you are sitting around a campfire, and out of the darkness appears your greatest enemy, which does not have to be a person. What inner warrior inside yourself do you call upon, and why?
Oh, that's a tough one. I'm the inner warrior. Well, I don't know. I've been fighting my whole life, so I don't know if I have that answer, but I guess it would have to be my sister used to defend me when I was little, and I would call on her image to probably help me through. It's supposed to be the short answer, I know, Jeff, but I faced a world of discrimination when I was young. I grew up as a minority in a place that didn't appreciate minorities, and it was tough. It was really tough, and I developed a very hard exterior, and so it unfortunately made me defending myself all the time. So I guess that inner warrior is the one that says you're good enough regardless of whatever somebody else says about you, and that's what my sister used to do for me.
Oh, that's awesome. I love that, actually. All right, so Denise has been kind enough and generous enough to offer us an ebook called Know Your Personality Type, How to Interact with Yourself the Way You Are. Love that. So as always, warriors, you can go to creative-warriors.com where you can not only get Denise's generous offer, but also the offers from all previous guests as well. So Denise, thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you, Jeff. It was my pleasure.
Wow, it's really been terrific. So that's it for now, warriors. Let's go out, create, serve, and be prosperous.